Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
It is indeed a sweepable edition of Rico Bronya, episode number 491. The New York Mets complete a sweep of the absolutely dreadful and pathetic Colorado Rockies, and they put the exclamation point on a homestand that featured three series, one against a really good team, two against some bad teams. The Mets win all three series. They go 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers. They go 2 out of 3 against Chicago, the White Sox, that is, and 2 out of 3 against the Colorado Rockies. So when you add it all up together, when you combine it together, you have yourselves a 7-2 homestand. A sweep of the Rockies, 2 out of 3 against the White Sox, 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers, a very successful 7-2 homestand. I think when this homestand began on the Rico Bronya, I said that's the goal. If you can go 7-2, win the Dodgers series, win 2 out of 3, and sweep against the two bad teams you're about to face, that adds up to 7-2, and that is, boom, that's what you want. 6-3 is okay, still pretty good. Anything less than that would be a major disappointment. Before we break down these games, one thing that is incredibly important, and watching these games against Colorado, not easy necessarily, not the easiest wins in the world, I want to remind you that all wins count the same. They all count the same. You beat the LA Dodgers, you beat the Chicago White Sox, you beat the Colorado Rockies. They all count the same. May feel better when you beat the LA Dodgers than when you beat the Colorado Rockies, but they're all the same. The Mets are in first place in the National League East, and we don't differentiate between, well, they won games against this team or that team. This isn't college football 25 years ago where we're kind of analyzing the strength of one's victory. With all that said, this was a stressful weekend against Colorado because even though it's baseball and even though anybody can lose on any given day, when the Rockies come to town with a 9-47 record, averaging 3.16 runs per game, with a team ERA of 5.55, These three games became can't lose games. And that's not fair because it's baseball. You know, at the end of the White Sox series, I said here on the Rico Bronya, hey, they won 2 out of 3. I mean, I get it. The White Sox are bad, but they won a series. You can't win them all. The Rocky thing felt different. I mean, you watch them, you see the statistics of the starting pitchers they threw at you, and the feeling watching these games, I got to tell you, was a little stressful. It was, boy, you better win. There's no excuse. So let's go through these games. The opener of this series on Friday night, this was the one game this weekend I did not go to, but Francisco Lindor, I thought, did a great job, and we'll spend more time on him because he's clearly a major leader for the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series. But I thought he set the tone in a lot of ways with what he did Friday night and set the tone for the kind of series he had. Kyle Freeland's on the mound. You've got David Peterson on the mound for us, for the good guys. And after Peterson pitched a 1-2-3 inning, Lindor behind in the count, cranks one over the fence to left center field. And because, like I said, you're watching these games with this stress of, boy, you better not lose to them, especially the opener of the series. The Lindor home run was like a fresh breath of air. I think I confused that one. A breath, whatever. You know, nice air, I guess. Hey, listen, we do these Ricos at night, man. I forget how to use the English language sometimes. But then again, I do that on the air as well. It was like a nice deep breath, him hitting that leadoff home run. The problem was the offense really didn't do much against Kyle Freeland. And that's what made the Friday game frustrating. Though I have to admit, so the Friday game is a game I didn't go to. Part of the reason I didn't go to that game is because my oldest son had a Little League game. And his Little League game began at 7:30 at night, which everyone hated except for me because I get off the air at 6:30. So I was able to literally get to the field as the first pitch was thrown. And as a dad, I was pumped up. Got to see my son play baseball. And you know the deal. I got the Mets on DVR, of course. So I'm sitting in the bleachers. I'm watching the game. I'm talking to a guy who is the father of someone on the other team. Great conversation. You know, we're talking about baseball. We're talking about dads. We're talking about the neighborhood. And then all of a sudden, very innocently, he looks at me and says, 3-1 Mets. And I didn't want to crush this guy because he doesn't know. He doesn't know I'm a maniac who's DVRing every Met game. So I think you'd be proud of me about the way I handled this. I said, oh, that's great. Can you do me a favor? And he said, what's that? I said, don't do that again. No more updates because I'm DVRing the game. And the guy's reaction was, it's the Rockies. And I'm like, I don't care if the Mets are playing a high school team. I'm that crazy. So when I got home and I put my kids to sleep and I started this game very late, whatever it was, 11 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night, I went into the game knowing we had a 3-1 lead. Now, I didn't know how we got the 3-1 lead. I didn't even know what inning it was because at that point, watching my son play Little League, I didn't even know what time it was. Like, I didn't even register, well, it's 8:45, so it must be the fourth or fifth inning. I had no idea. So when I sat down to watch this game and score this game, I did have, and this is rare, it's like the first time I've had this year because the DVR record has been perfect in terms of not knowing what's going on. But I did know the Mets had built a 3-1 lead. Nice to see Starling Marte go deep, who is in this order against Kyle Freeland, which I understand why he's in the order. I mean, he's basically your right-handed DH against left-handed starters. He doesn't need to be because the reality is Brett Beatty could face lefties because his defense is so good at third base. That's not what Mendy decided to do on Friday. He decided to play Mark Vientos, who went 0-for-3 with 3 strikeouts, all against the lefty Kyle Freeland. So it didn't exactly work out in the case of Vientos, but it did in Starling Marte. And then you had Juan Soto. And we spent a lot of time. If you haven't heard episode 490, we posted this one very late Saturday night into Sunday morning. But you can listen to this anytime because it's basically us analyzing what David Stearns had to say when he met the media on Friday. And a lot of what he was asked was about Juan Soto, which makes sense. Now, obviously, Juan has been a big story with his struggles. This weekend felt obvious that he was going to break out. And here's what I'll say about Juan, who had a very good weekend, hit the home run on Saturday, hit the home run on Sunday, which we will get to. And in this case, ripped an RBI double that gave the Mets the 2-0 lead. And keep this in mind, Soto hit this RBI double with two outs and Lindor on first base. So technically, it's not a hit with runners in scoring position, but it's why that can be a little bit misleading, because that is a big hit. It's a third inning. It's a 1-0 game, and he drove a run in. So whether he's on first or second, Juan Soto drove a run in with that booming RBI double up the alley in right center field. But if you listen to the David Stearns edition, you'll hear a lot about David's opinion on Soto's slump. But this weekend was tailor-made for Juan Soto to break out of it. You're facing a Rockies team that's incompetent. I mean, honestly, you're facing a Rockies team whose ERAs of their starting pitchers coming into the starts, not what they are now, coming into the starts, was 0-7, 5.86 for Kyle Freeland, 1-9, 6.50 for Antonio Sensatella. And then Carson Palmquist, who's only made three starts, 0-3, 8.78 ERA. If you can't pummel these guys, or at least look respectable, then I think there'd be more worry for Juan Soto. So I'm not convinced, despite Juan's great weekend, that, all right, he's out of it. It was a good weekend. I give him a lot of credit for it. But I think we need to see him now continue this in LA against the Dodgers. But the RBI double in the third inning was great. Gave him a 2-0 lead. The Marte home run in the fourth, great. Gave him a 3-0 lead. And all the while, David Peterson was getting a lot of help defensively, which is great to see from a team that has not been great defensively. You saw a great play by Francisco Lindor with the bases loaded and two outs in the third inning when Tyro Estrada hit that line drive and Lindor leapt to the sky and made a great leaping catch. So not just a great defensive play by a Met middle infielder, but a great defensive play that saved runs from being scored. Then you had Pete Alonso, who I thought had his best scooping game and best scooping series of the year. Pete Alonso made a great play with one out in the fifth inning, bailing Lindor out on a bad throw. Then he made a great play in the sixth inning, bailing out a defensive throw by Vientos because Beatty had not entered the game yet. Made another great scoop there. Then you saw Juan Soto make a very nice running catch to end the seventh inning after Sam Hilliard had hit the pinch hit home run. So you had four standout defensive plays by the New York Met defense, and they were going to need it. They were going to need it because David Peterson, who, yes, got bailed out by his defense, but also ran into trouble in the sixth inning and got bailed out when Waskar Brazoban got the final out with runners on second and third. And the Mets at this point only nursing a 3-1 lead. So the game was certainly tightening up at this point. So they needed the defense and they needed really the good effort from their bullpen. And as far as who gave them a good effort out of their bullpen, Brazoban made the mistake by giving up the home run to Sam Hilliard. But Reed Garrett and Edwin Diaz are now becoming the formula. And we would see this throughout this weekend. But Reed Garrett comes in. He is now throwing strikes on a consistent basis. Pitches a dominating 1-2-3 inning in the eighth inning. At this point, it is now a 3-2 game because of the Hilliard home run, because of the RBI double David Peterson gave up to Ryan McMahon last batter he faced in the sixth inning. So Reed Garrett comes in, high leverage spot, heart of the order. Granted, it's the Rockies. Their heart of the order is it's garbage, to say the least. I mean, put it this way. Their heart of the order features zero players that would start on the New York Mets. Maybe Hunter Goodman would, based on the production the Mets are getting from catcher. We'll get to that later. So I guess Hunter Goodman would be the one guy to play, but Tyro Estrada, fresh off the IL, who had a very rough weekend at times, especially defensively. Brenton Doyle, who also stinks and had a tough time defensively. Get to that later as well. But nevertheless, Reed Garrett's back in control. Reed Garrett's been great ever since the struggle he had against the Yankees where he got bailed out on that Saturday afternoon game when he couldn't throw a strike. And then I think it was DJ LeMahieu hit the line drive right at Juan Soto. A 1-2-3 inning from Reed Garrett, wins a tough battle against Estrada, struck him out on the ninth pitch. And then Edwin Diaz did a remarkable job, striking out the side, barely breaking a sweat. Let me jump back to Peterson. So Peterson's outing, 5 2/3 innings, 5 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. I thought it was like a B-. Like, the final line is good. You know, you get into the sixth inning, you only allow 1 run. It's not bad. I thought he was very, very fortunate. We mentioned the Lindor play that changed everything in the third inning. And then he really ran out of gas in the sixth inning. As far as when Mendy should have taken him out, I actually didn't have an issue with this. I thought he handled it well. He got the first two guys out. He hits Tyro Estrada ahead of him 1-2, gives up a base hit to Brenton Doyle. And at that point, it's 3-0, tying run at the plate, Ryan McMahon, who he got out twice. You have the lefty-lefty. I didn't have an issue with it. Once he gives up the RBI double to McMahon, then I think it's obvious for Mendy to go get him. And he goes to Oscar Brazoban. He really went to his trustworthy bullpen arms, Brazoban, Garrett into Diaz, and it all worked out. Unfortunately, the Met offense just didn't do much. You know, they get the run from Lindor early. They get the RBI double from Soto. They get the home run from Marte, but then they don't do anything. Kyle Freeland actually put together a pretty good start. 6 innings, 3 runs. They had a couple of opportunities. Soto led off the sixth with a base hit. Pete bounced into a double play. Then Nimmo got a base hit. Marte grounded out. But luckily, Francisco Lindor, who had such a great weekend, hits the home run in the eighth inning. So he starts the game with a home run. He ends the game with a home run. He makes some pretty nifty defensive plays throughout. So just a really good day from Francisco Lindor. And I do want to read this one email about it. I want to jump to the email a little bit. Of course, we love your emails, thericob@gmail.com. But this was an email from a loyal listener talking about how Lindor's performance, the home run to start, the home run to end it, should now be referred to as the Tommy Agee, because he did that in the World Series. And I thought that was very, very cool. So I like that. I think it's a great idea. I apologize. I can't find your email right now, which, you know, I blame all of you. We get so many emails now that it's very difficult to, like, go through them. So I'm going to try to find it before this is over. But I liked it. I thought it was a very good idea that we should now, from now on, call it the Tommy Agee when Lindor or anyone hits a home run to start and a home run to end it, because that is something Tommy did in New York Met history.
I'll read it for you. It's from Adam Siegel.
Adam Siegel, you the man. Go ahead, Hall.
As I know you like to recognize Mets history, I propose a new title to be given to a player who has a game where his offensive and defensive contributions flip the score and directly provide the Mets a victory. As you know, in Game 3 of the 1996 World Series, Tommy Agee hit a leadoff home run, like you said, and later made two spectacular defensive plays that saved 5 runs. The Mets won 5-0. Theoretically, without Agee's home run and great defensive plays, the Mets could have lost 5-4. In last night's game, Lindor hit 2 solo home runs and also made a leaping catch on a line drive with the bases loaded to save 2 runs. The Mets won 4-2, but without Lindor's offensive and defensive contributions, the Mets could have lost 4-2. In honor of the great Tommy Agee, a fan favorite, by the way, my father's favorite, I say that on Friday night, Lindor had a Tommy Agee game.
Thank you for finding the email, because I screwed up what he actually said anyway. So thank you very much. It's not 2 home runs. It's home run and defense that saves runs. And he's spot on, because that Lindor leaping line drive with the bases loaded, it's definitely 2 runs. That's for sure. Is it 3 runs? Does it turn into an extra base hit? Who the hell knows? Does it also knock David Peterson out earlier in the game? Certainly possible. So I'm with you, Adam. Anytime a guy contributes a home run and great defense, from here on out, we call that a Francisco Lindor. And he certainly did that. I also thought the Mets got a huge break in this game. Go back to the sixth inning when Ryan McMahon hit that RBI double. There were 2 guys on base. There were 2 on and 2 out when McMahon hit it. At the time, it's 3-0. Both runs should have scored. I don't know how Brenton Doyle didn't score on that play with 2 outs on a ball that was hit into the right field corner. And Brenton Doyle had a tough weekend, because not only does he not score on that play, which makes it 3-2, and you can't assume everything in the game works out the exact same way. Can't assume the Rockies then tie it, but it's different. It's obviously a very different situation. But on Saturday, and we'll get to this later, he also took an incredibly awful route on the Brett Beatty triple. So you saw the little things that makes the Rockies terrible. The little, not just the obvious things, but the little things that make them terrible. Let me get back to Diaz. Edwin Diaz is so locked in. And when he struck out the side in the ninth inning, protecting a 2-run lead, Not the easiest. Not like they were up by three runs or five runs. It was a two-run game. Put one guy on base. Things can get dangerous. Edwin Diaz continued this incredible stretch where he had not allowed a base hit for 31 consecutive batters, which is unbelievable. You know, I think we have said numerous times, it's unlikely Edwin Diaz will ever be the guy from 2022. He is looking right now like the guy from 2022. And that is damn exciting because I don't think any of us expected that, but really, really incredible work by Edwin Diaz. And so when the Mets won game one by a final score of 4-2, our attitude shouldn't have been, hey, it's the Rockies and they barely won. That should not be our attitude. Our attitude should have been, hey, they won a freaking game. They beat a team that they're supposed to beat. It doesn't matter how it looks. It really doesn't, because a win is a win. So, yes, it wasn't pretty. Yes, it probably stressed you out because losing to the Colorado Rockies feels like an unacceptable exercise. But nevertheless, 4-2, 3-2, 9-2, they all count the same. You jump to Saturday's game, a game I was at. That was fun to go to. Let me start with Senga, and then we'll get to everything else. This was as dominant as we've ever seen Kodai Senga. And the final line won't tell you that, because the final line will say 6 1/3 innings, 2 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. And that's a good outing, but it doesn't, I think, express the dominance of what Kodai Senga did late Saturday afternoon. He strikes out the leadoff hitter on a clock violation. Hey, they all count the same. He makes the one mistake to Ezekiel Tovar, in which he threw a 3-2 forkball that just didn't get down enough, and Tovar crushed it over the left field fence. All right. A little stress late Saturday afternoon. The Rockies take their first lead of the weekend, 1-0. And who knows what we're getting from Kodai Senga. But he struck out the next two hitters, struck out two more hitters in the second inning, and then proceeded to just dominate. Like, there wasn't hard contact against him. He was getting swing and misses. He was pumping a fastball right by guys. His forkball, his ghost fork, was dancing. There were a couple of good defensive plays behind him. Tyrone Taylor made this great catch, and this was a weird one. So being at the game, when a ball is hit in the air, usually I'm going to look at the defender because the defender is going to give you kind of a hint of where this ball was going. So I don't know if you guys remember this play. If you have the MLB app, go back and watch this because I'm not sure how it looked on TV. But Kyle Farmer, leading off the sixth inning, hits a fly ball to center field. For whatever reason, I'm choosing to stare at the ball. I'm looking at the pearly white baseball flying through the air, and I'm seeing it get pushed in. Like, I'm watching it get pushed in and to the right. And I'm not even looking at Tyrone Taylor, but I'm seeing the way the ball is being pushed by the whipping wind. And I'm like, oh my God, what the hell is happening here? And Tyrone Taylor made a very underrated, really good catch. Because I don't know how this looks on TV or how it looked, even if you're just staring at the defender. But I'm staring at the baseball, and I'm like, what the hell is happening? This is like a roller coaster ride. And Taylor cut in and to the right and made this awesome sliding catch.
Yeah, so I got to be honest with you, and this was all game long. The ball was moving, dude. There were so many times where, like, a ball would feel like it's going out of play, and you just hear, you know, the TV crew be like, oh, that ball's coming back into play because the wind's taking it. So you saw Taylor make that catch, and I think him and Lindor were like smiling and laughing at how ridiculous it was. But it was just – it was a difficult day for anybody in the outfield, and it was a fantastic catch by Taylor.
Yeah, and maybe that's the excuse for Brenton Doyle on the Brett Beatty triple in the first thing, because – that was another one where I guess I was doing this a lot on Saturday. I was looking at the defender and I watched Doyle's route on that fly ball that Beatty hit to left center field. And it was an awful route. And the ball ends up, of course, hitting halfway up the fence. So I don't know if even if he gets a good jump on it, if he makes the play, but you are right. The wind was whipping. It was a cold day. Like when you go to Citi Field on a day like that, it really depends on if your seat has the wind. If your seat has the wind, you're going to freeze your ass off. If there is no wind, not 65 degrees. It's actually a really nice day. Where I was sitting up in my normal seats, I felt the wind. Like I was freezing my ass off. I was so cold that I passed on ice cream. I was definitely going for the Mr. Softy. And by the sixth inning, I said, nah, I think I'm gonna pass on this one. It was that cold.
So the other thing that happened too, and I forgot which inning it took place, but the shadows started to take place, and I think it really started to screw up some of the hitters. You don't get sun in the seats you're in, right?
Yeah, so where I'm sitting in the 300s, I get sun for about 20 minutes between about 5 o'clock and 5:20. It like sneaks in through the stadium. It's weird. But for the most part, you're right. Where I'm sitting, I don't get the sun. The 4 o'clock start's a weird start. And we've got a few of those throughout this season. We've had a few of those throughout the season. But if it's not sunny out, you don't feel it. When the sun is out, you'll feel those weird, odd shadows. But I don't mind those start times because you know what that gets you ready for? The playoffs. Because as you remember last year, they had a bunch of 5 o'clock first pitches. Like that was common ground for the Mets during the playoffs. So I'm not against it, but
why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
To jump back to Senga, he was great. Like, he was as dominant as we've ever seen him. He gives up the home run. He gets a bunch of strikeouts through six innings. He's at 76 pitches, one base runner. And the one base runner was the home run by Tovar. And I'm literally thinking, and I got to get over this. And I think a part of it was I went to this game with a couple of friends. And one of the friends I brought was the guy who was with me for the Johan Santana no-hitter, which we are celebrating the anniversary of. June 1st is the anniversary of Nohan. We call it the Nohaniversary. And I do appreciate that Johan Santana really leans into it. But it was a coincidence that I took my friend that I was with for the Johan no-hitter. And I don't know, maybe it's because he was there, but in the fifth inning, I'm thinking to myself, if he doesn't give up that dumb home run to Tovar, we're sitting here watching a five-inning perfect game by Kodai Senga. Now, I know that's not how it works. Second batter of the game hit a home run, but he was that dominant. Like, he was that good. Unfortunately, and it happened quick, he ran out of gas. And pitch count, like I always say, man, I say this a lot, pitch count's overrated. It's overrated both ways. Like, sometimes a pitch count is low, and we almost want to keep someone in the game because of that, or a pitch count is high, and we got to take someone out. You got to go by the way a guy is pitching. Now, there were no signs that Kodai Senga was going to fall apart, especially with a low pitch count, but he walked Tovar to lead off the seventh inning. He gives up a screaming line drive to Hunter Goodman, but luckily it's right at Beatty. He walks Ryan McMahon, second walk of the game, because remember, he walked the leadoff hitter Tovar, so he hadn't walked anybody, and now he walks two of the next three batters. Then he gives up an RBI single to Tyro Estrada, and at that point, I am even screaming, Mendy, get him out. Thank you, Kodai. Great effort, but get out of the game. And again, I agree with Mendy. I don't think I would have done it a batter early because you want to trust Kodai Senga. You do. I don't want to fall into the victim of the pitch count is still low, but it's more I trust Senga. Like, part of what he's done so brilliantly in 25 is that he gets out of trouble. Like, he doesn't have the greatest whip in the world, but he's got a great ERA. And the reason he has a great ERA is because he gets out of trouble. So I wasn't ready to pull him after the second walk, but once he gives up the hit to Tyro Estrada, his second hit he gave up and the second run he gave up and final run he gave up, it was definitely time to take him out. What was funny, I don't even know if the right word is funny, but we'll use it anyway. What was funny is Buteau comes in, first and second, one out. Now the Mets have a 7-2 lead. I'm not concerned about the game, obviously. I feel pretty good with a 5-run lead. I'm concerned about Senga's ERA and his outing because I just sat there watching him pitch six DeGrom-like innings. That's really what it was. It was six innings as well as you can pitch. And now because of a couple of walks and a base hit, this outing has a chance to actually not look that good. Jose Buteau, after he didn't give up, but got Brenton Doyle to ground out right in front of the mound, and he walked Sam Hilliard, and the bases were loaded with two outs. He was a base hit away from Senga's final line being 6 1/3, four runs, which is not good, which is not a start we would celebrate, even though I probably would be saying the same things here on the Rico that, hey, he was dominant. I know the line doesn't tell you that. But luckily, Buteau struck out Kyle Farmer, kept the Rockies at bay, kept the 5-run lead, and then did a very good job in the eighth inning. And then Devenski shut the door in the ninth inning, so the Mets gave up no more runs. But it's funny, and it tells you how misleading stats can be, that we're sitting there watching a Buteau-Farmer battle in the top of the seventh inning, in which the outcome of this at-bat is going to determine what that box score looks like for Kodai Senga, when if you watch the game, you know he was dominant. So dominant performance by Senga. If we're whipping out a grade, I would give him he wore down at the end, so I guess the A goes away. B+. It was an A performance, not getting through the seventh inning, putting a couple of guys on. But you know what? Screw it. A-. That's where I'm going. I mean, he was the Evan Starr of the game in my scorebook, so he earned that despite all the offense. And speaking of the offense, loading up the bases with nobody out in the first inning, Pete Alonso thinking he drew a walk to drive a run in, he's called back by the home plate umpire Ramos and then strikes out swinging. As he strikes out swinging, after thinking he walked, though it's the Rockies, there is a thought, are you kidding me? Are the Mets really going to not put together a big inning against Antonio Sensatella and his 6.50 ERA after they loaded up the bases with nobody out? Luckily, when Beatty hit the ball to center, even before I knew it wasn't going to be caught by Doyle and it was going to turn into a 3-run triple, there was this, at least for me, a sigh of relief of, all right, we're going to at least tie the game. Because off the bat, it's a sacrifice fly. And the ball kept traveling and traveling, and Doyle took a terrible route to it, and it turns into a 3-run bases-clearing triple, which really set the Mets up to never look back. got a clutch hit from Tyrone Taylor, an RBI single, added the back-to-back home runs in the fourth inning. Brandon Nimmo, the two-run shot, which really broke the game open. Juan Soto hitting the solo shot on the first pitch right after. Very good to see. And from that moment on, it was a nice, easy victory. Good performance by Brandon Nimmo. Two hits from him, including the base hit in the first inning that set up the bases loaded, the two-run home run. And obviously with Soto, we're looking to see him get going. So hitting a home run in the fourth inning, even if it's against Antonio Sensatella and his 7 ERA, because I think his ERA ended up at 7 by the time he left the building. He ended up pitching 4 innings and allowed 7 runs. Good job by the Met offense just taking advantage of it and beating him up. Now, I do want to read this email from Jimmy. Jimmy wrote this email right before the game. And I respect this. He saw the lineup for this game and was not happy. And I think Jimmy would be pleased that we're going to hold him accountable. Maybe he's right about what he said. We'll let you decide in the Rico audience. But this is a pre-game 2 email prior to the Mets scoring 8 runs and 11 hits and beating the Rockies by a final score of 8-2. Jimmy writes, I hope I'm eating my words and you can rip me on the next pod, but you tell me 2 things. Number one, how does Jared Young DHing over Mark Vientos, Starling Marte, or fitting Acuna into the starting lineup help this team moving forward? And here's the kicker. Marte is 7-for-13 with a home run and 3 RBIs with a 1,417 OPS against Sensatella. If Marte was able to post, as the kids say, Mendy is derelict in his duties as manager of the New York Mets today. He's made a lot of odd calls lately, handles the staff very well, handles the pen very well. I do not think he's handled playing time well. Acuna has basically become a non-factor. A combo of Beatty's emergence and Vientos' decline has seemingly made Vientos a part-time DH, sharing time with Marte and Young, getting a game a week at third base. I hope you read and give thoughts to my email about Ronnie Mauricio, but take note of the decision by Mendoza today and rip him for it. If there's ever been a day to find Marte playing time, it's today. I don't get it. Enjoy your weekend. Thank you, Jimmy. Here's a great thing, Jim. When I saw this lineup and I wrote it out in my scorebook, I thought the same thing. I actually thought 2 things. One thing you didn't include, but let me start with the things you did include. I don't fully understand the Jared Young thing right now. And he hasn't been bad. He hit that home run. He had a base hit in this game. He ended up going 1-for-4. And even the out he made in the first inning with a runner on third, it was a line drive. He hit the ball hard. So it's not that Jared Young has been bad. It's more the Mets have a lot of guys on this roster. This is a good thing. This is a great problem to have. They have a lot of guys on the roster that I want to see play. Like, I want to see Mark Vientos play 90% of the time. I want to see Brett Beatty play 90% of the time. Luis Angel Acuna, I want to see sometimes. I think he has certainly lost that he needs to play everyday feel. He hasn't hit for a month, but he plays great defense. He can steal a base. He can still be helpful to this team. So I don't want to bury him, nor do I want to send him down to the minor leagues. I want to see him play. I also, believe it or not, don't mind seeing Jeff McNeil play. I don't mind seeing Tyrone Taylor play. So and Marte too. Like Marte against lefties, and you made a great point about his numbers against Sensatella. That's a good righty to get him in the lineup against. I want to see all these guys play. Obviously, you can't play all of them at the same time, but they have a lot of guys on this roster that I'd like to see play. Jared Young is just there. And I know he had success in the KBO, and maybe David Stearns has another special up his sleeve, and he's a guy that we're laughing about a few months from now because he's emerged as some big bat and some big factor on this team. But my issue, whenever I see his name in the lineup, is more who's not in the lineup. So this isn't about Jared Young as much as it's about, at least in game 2 of this series, and Jimmy said it, Mark Vientos. Like, I'm not giving up on Mark Vientos. I know Mark Vientos had an awful Friday night when he went 0-for-3 with 3 strikeouts. I still want him out there. I still think Mark Vientos can be a big help on this team. He did have a double in Sunday's game when he was back in the lineup. He hasn't been unplayable. I'm not going to say he's been great. He hasn't been unplayable. So I do agree with that, Jimmy. I agree with your points. Obviously, the Mets scored 1 billion runs. That's great. Not like Jared Young was the reason, but nevertheless, I agree. The guy I was surprised was not in the lineup was Luis Torrens. because Francisco Alvarez has done very little, including on Friday going 0-for-3, and now he's in the lineup on Saturday, day game after night game. We've talked here on the Rico about, hey, maybe Turen should just play a little bit more. Maybe in a three-game series, Turen should play 2 out of 3. I'm not ready to send Alvarez to the minors or completely demote him, but maybe a shift in playing time, which we started to see. So I was surprised when I saw Alvarez batting ninth, and he did not have a good day. He struck out in the second. He grounded into a double play in which he did not move. I'm sorry. The effort level on the 4-6-3 double play in the fourth inning was minimal at best. And I think most of us will put up with Juan Soto because he's Juan Soto. Going to be tough to put up with Francisco Alvarez. Then he strikes out in the fifth inning. And then, and I'm not sure how many people were still locked in on this, but in the eighth inning, right after Jeff McNeil hits a home run to break the game more open, it was 7-2 and now it's 8-2. Alvarez hits a line drive to right field. Great. Base hit. Alvarez on the board with a base hit. And Mickey Moniak, the right fielder, tried to throw him out at first. And even though he didn't throw him out at first, the fact that there was a chance that he was going to be thrown out at first base, that is a bad look. That is a bad look. So I'll get this out of the way right now, and I won't spend too much time on it because there are a lot of Ricoers out there who did not like the net negative segment on these series recaps. And when you sweep a three-game series, how could there be a negative? There's always a negative. Just like you could always find the positive. Francisco Alvarez is 1-for-7 with 3 strikeouts, including almost being thrown out at first base. Congratulations. He is the net negative of this three-game series sweep over the Colorado Rockies. But otherwise, we saw the offense break out. We saw Jeff McNeil hit an 0-2 pitch over the fence. We saw Senga retire 17 in a row. Buteau and Davinsky did a nice job in the Met bullpen. And we had ourselves a nice, neat and tidy, dare I say, Hoff, easy 8-2 victory on a Saturday afternoon.
So I got to go back to Francisco Alvarez for 1 second because I've done a little deep dive here.
Yes.
And I don't know if this is me just trying to figure out an excuse for Francisco Alvarez. But there's clearly something wrong here with his struggles with the batting. But on the other hand, too, he came back from this hamate injury, right? It's a wrist injury. It's a fracture in the wrist. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I go back to Mark Teixeira, and I did a little bit more legwork on when he got hurt. The hamate was the original injury. And then what ended up taking him out the entire 2013 season was the sheath injury, which I don't know if it's exactly connected to it, but the hamate and the sheath are kind of connected in some sort of way.
Right.
So I'm not trying to give Francisco Alvarez a pass here and say, hey, this guy's got to be better. He's got to hustle. He's got to do this. He's got to do that. But there's a possibility that he is wearing fatigue or still having a problem with the initial injury from this hamate bone. And I'm concerned about it.
I think it's certainly possible. I think the recovery, and I remember when he first went down with this injury, we talked about this, that when he comes back, we may not be able to necessarily expect him to blossom as a hitter right away. But I think that's even more of a reason for why this should be a timeshare between him and Luis Torrens, why Torrens should just play more. I also think what hurts Alvarez and the argument you're making, he didn't hit last year. He hasn't really hit. Like he's given us flashes. And he's young. He's only 23 years old. So the positive is I'm nowhere near giving up on him. I think Brett Beatty is teaching us a lesson. Vientos taught us a lesson last year, too, which is you got to be patient with young players as much as we're quick to, he stinks, bench him, get rid of him. But I think that the lack of production in his major league career is probably what's also causing the Met fan to say, hey, you know, how good is Francisco Alvarez? What's he ever going to be?
Well, let me ask you a question. Is he a liability defensively?
No.
Okay, so that's a good start right there because there's other catchers we've seen who we've been force-fed in baseball on a regular basis that couldn't even field the position well, but they were supposed to be hitters and they couldn't hit. So at least this much, he's still – I'm not saying he's a dominant catcher, but he's a very effective defensive catcher.
Yeah, I think the problem is Torrens is better. So – He's a good defensive catcher, but Luis Torrens is better. We get to the finale of this three-game series, and I had a great time on Sunday afternoon because this was a rare date day with my wife. My kids were with the grandparents, and so me and my wife went out to Citi Field. And I don't know if you know, Hoff, what we did at Citi Field besides watch a Met victory, but I'm going to hold it up and then describe it to our audio audience. I partook in the Takara Chuhai Fuji Apple. Now, the one I'm holding in my hand right now for the YouTube audience is not the same one I drank at the ballpark. I didn't take it home with me, but I do have one at home. And let me just take a sip.
Funny enough, Evan, I'm doing the same thing right now. I'm actually drinking. I opened this up and I had a nice, put some ice on it. Dude, this is like the sweetest tasting drink I've ever had. And I mean that in the most amazing way. Like, it's refreshing.
Well, it's fantastic. It was refreshing today because today was weird. Even though the temperature was the same as what it was on Saturday, I was sitting in the sun. So when you sit in the sun and there's no wind, it feels warm. So for me, it was even more refreshing, and it had that apple taste, which I like apple. I'm a fan of apple, but I'm also a Met fan, and I'm sitting at Citi Field. So it kind of added to it. Now, here's the good news. If you are like, all right, Ev, I want to go to Citi Field. I'm going to go to the next homestand. Where do I get the Chuhai apple canned cocktail? Like, where am I getting it? So there's a lot of choices. They have it at the World's Fair Market on the field level. They have it at the home plate market on the field level. They have it on the market at the Tequila Porch and then the Grand Slam and Sushi by Beyond Nightlife on the Clover level. So you've got various options for it, but I had it today. I had it early. I had it right before the game, and I believe it gave the Mets luck. I know we had already won two games, and I've had a very good win-loss record at Citi Field this year, but I don't know. The apple flavor gave it a little bit, maybe gave us some luck. So,
well, it definitely
next time you're at Citi, you could try it out.
Do you want to know why it did? Because there was three apple appearances.
True.
For the fans.
That
we had Pete Alonso, we had Francisco Lindor, and we had Juan Soto.
By the way, one quick thing about apples that I definitely need to address, and this is for the kids in the Rico audience. So on Saturday, I brought a couple of friends of mine, and one of my friends brought his son, okay? His son is 7 years old and is kind of deciding between the Mets and the Yankees because dad's a Met fan and mom's a Yankee fan. So this kid, I'll even give him a shout out. His name is Lucas. Young Lucas, big fan of the apple, okay? Big fan of the apple going up after a home run. So when Brandon Nimmo hit the two-run home run in the fourth inning on Saturday, he was ecstatic, right? And it was great. Apple goes up. Fireworks are shooting off. There's smoke out of the apple, like full experience. And I have to admit, like, I don't pay attention to the apple. And for whatever reason, both of my kids are not that into the apple. Like, Jed, I think, is past it. And Spence is more distracted by Mr. Matt. So my kids are like, yeah, apple's cool. Got no issue with it. But Lucas was a big fan. So Nimmo hits the home run. He's going nuts. On the next pitch, that's when Soto hit the home run to left center field. The apple didn't come up for the Soto home run. And he asked me why, because I'm the know-alling Met expert. And my theory that hopefully someone can back me up on is it doesn't work that quickly after it already gone up. I don't know if that's true.
Dude, okay, so this is an old joke in back of the day, but Todd Jones, the pitcher, was told a story about how he was on the mound and he gave up back-to-back-to-back home runs, and the pitching coach came out and he was waiting to hear, like, hey, we're going to pull you or whatever the case is. He's like, I know I'm terrible. He goes, dude, I don't care. I'm just waiting for them to recharge the fireworks. I think that might be one of the cases.
I think you may be right. So that he was disappointed. Now, luckily, later in the game, Jeff McNeil hit the home run. So we got another apple visit and it went up and it was a success. But yeah, so we may need a Citi Field investigation into how quick they could bring the apple back up. Because that was the theory I had for Lucas. Anyhow, let's get back to Sunday's game. Let me start with Clay Holmes. Clay Holmes pitched another, because I think he's done this a lot this year, another just solid game. Wasn't dominant, wasn't bad. He was solid and he was efficient, which is why he kept that pitch count so incredibly low, 58 through 5, 73 through 6. It allowed him to get through seven innings, which was great to see. I mean, how rare has it been for a Mets starting pitcher to go seven innings? In fact, I'm glad I asked that hypothetical question. Let's go through it. Kodai Senga on April 13th, seven scoreless innings. David Peterson against the Dodgers, 7 2/3 innings, and Clay Holmes. So only the third time this year we saw a Mets starting pitcher complete seven innings, and he was able to do it because he was efficient. Now, he made two mistakes in this game. Two mistakes. The home run to Orlando Arcia that gave the Rockies another 1-0 lead. They took the lead twice now. I'm burping a little bit from my Takara Chuhai. They took a lead on Saturday. They took a lead on Sunday. So he makes the mistake to Orlando Arcia. And that was a sinker that was just right down the middle. He threw a sinker. It hung there, and Arcia hammered it. And then the mistake in the fifth inning, which was disappointing because it was right after Pete hit his three-run home run. So the Mets had just taken the lead. And Tyler Freeman basically jumped on a slider, again, right down the middle, and he crushed it to right center field. So Clay gives up the two home runs, the two mistake pitches. And other than that, he was really, really good. He pitched to contact. He only struck out three guys. Okay, who cares? He didn't walk anybody, so we saw excellent command from Clay Holmes. In fact, he not only didn't walk anybody, he only took it to a three-ball count twice the entire game. He did hit a batter outside of that, so doesn't count, but he did hit Keston Hiura. How do you pronounce his name again? He just got called up by Colorado. I think he was with the Brewers a couple of years ago. Keston Hiura, whatever. Unless he's a Met, I'm not going to worry about it. But other than that, Clay had great command. He let his defense make plays, got a double play turn behind him, got a great play by Luis Angel Acuna, nice diving play that ended the sixth inning. It's just a really good, solid performance by Clay Holmes. What was frustrating is they're facing this Carson Palmquist, who had only made three career starts. He had been bombed in all of them. He couldn't throw a strike. So what does he do? He retires the first seven guys and strikes out five of them. So he got off to this great start, and luckily it all kind of changed in that fourth inning when Starling Marte had a great at-bat, drawing a walk. Soto got hit by a pitch. Luckily he was okay. And then behind in the count, how many times has Pete done this year? Pete Alonso hit an absolute rip to right field, an opposite field bomb Piazza-like to give them a three-run lead or give them a two-run lead, three-run home run, 12 for Pete, so he's clearly out of the home run slump. But even after that, Palmquist sort of settled down, worked through the Vientos double, got through it, and then Francisco Lindor hit the home run in the fifth inning after the Rockies had tied the game. So what a weekend for Lindor. The two home runs from Friday. He hits the home run that gives them the lead. Basically, it turns out to be the game-winning home run in the fifth inning. And then they got this Palmquist out of the game. So his final line wasn't any good, but he struck out eight guys in 4 2/3 innings. And at least for the first three innings, it looked like, wow, this guy who stinks so far in his major league career is going to deliver a hell of a performance. The Soto home run in the eighth inning, which I actually captured on video. I was a typical Met fan tourist, if you will. I was filming his at-bats because I was sitting in different seats, closer seats. So I was like, let me see what I can get. And Soto going down on one knee, getting one out to right center field. Also on base three times in this game. So it was a very good weekend for Juan Soto. He ended up going 4 for 9, hits the two home runs, on base seven times in 12 plate appearances. I get it. It's the Colorado Rockies. Not the greatest pitching in the world. But hopefully this leads to something. Now, go out and do it against the Dodgers, clearly. But that's the hope. I think that's the hope we all have watching Soto have a good weekend, that this kind of builds his confidence a little bit. If we do think he's pressing, maybe this relaxes him. And what also should relax everybody is the Mets just had this great homestand. They jumped the Phillies again because the Phillies ran into this Brewers buzzsaw. The Brewers have been red hot, climbing back up in the National League Central. They've now won seven in a row, so they are the hottest team in Major League Baseball. Good for them. And they swept the Philadelphia Phillies. So the Mets, who were as far back as three games out earlier this week, now jump back up into first place with what happened this weekend. But one other thing about this game, the bullpen. It is a close game. It's a one-run game. Reed Garrett in the eighth inning, again, throws strikes, works his way through a one-out single he gave up to Tyler Freeman and a stolen base, gets back-to-back strikeouts with a runner on second and less than two outs. We are seeing Reed Garrett right now at his best. And then you have Edwin Diaz, who comes in with a two-run lead because Soto hit the home run. And outside of finally giving up a base hit, a leadoff hit to Sam Hilliard, what does he do to respond? He strikes out the next three guys. Utter brilliance from Edwin Diaz. And so what can be fun sometimes when you have a three-game sweep is it makes the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series competitive. So before I give you my thoughts and before Hoff gives you his thoughts, let's hear from a first-time email.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Taylor. Graham Mitchell writes, hotly contested star of the series. Evan and Hoff, happy sweep, fellas. Boy, would I not want to be in your seats today. The star of the series is sure to make someone mad with how many big names performed in these three games. I have honorable mentions for Juan Soto, Pete Alonso, and Clay Holmes for their offensive performances and for Clay going seven innings on Sunday. Solid work from our big guys. The debate, in my opinion, will come between Francisco Lindor and Edwin Diaz. Lindor with a monster series between the two home run game, the lead taking home run in the third game, and obviously his defense is a near constant. I have settled on Diaz as the star of the series, though. Two saves, six strikeouts, only one hit. You can't do any better than that as a closer in a three-game set. And for that reason, I say, Edwin, you're the man right now. Thank you, Graham. I do want to say that there's one honorable mention you left out, and that is Reed Garrett. Because if we're going to give the flowers to Edwin for the two saves and all the strikeouts, how about Reed Garrett pitching two scoreless innings? He didn't strike out six. He struck out four. There was only one base runner against him, much like one base runner against Edwin. And like Edwin, he had to protect very small leads. In fact, when Garrett protected his lead on Sunday, it was a one-run game. When Diaz protected his lead, it was a two-run game. So I think Reed Garrett is right up there as the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series. And you mentioned the other guys that do deserve credit. Pete Alonso, I think, was 1-for-4 in each of these games, played great defense at first base, and, of course, hit the three-run home run in Sunday's game. We gave the numbers for Soto. I mean, 4-for-9, on base 7 times, a couple of home runs. Also, good defense from Soto. I know Lindor's got more of the defensive reputation, but let's not forget that Soto and Alonso also played really good defense. You mentioned Clay Holmes. I wouldn't ignore Kodai Senga. We talked about how dominant he looked. So I think that whenever you sweep a series and you do it the way the Mets did it, of course, there's going to be a lot of candidates. I have a clear winner, though. Before I tell you my clear winner, let's see if Hoff is thinking the way I'm thinking. Hoff, who is the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series?
I wish we could do a co-men right now, because it honestly is a 1-2 punch between Reed Garrett and Edwin Diaz. You can't have one without the other. Let's be serious. It's like milk and cookies. You have to have both of them. Otherwise, it doesn't work as well. Reed Garrett was phenomenal, and Edwin Diaz one-upped him. So because of that, I got to give it to Diaz. But I it's so tough not to give it to Reed Garrett on this as well.
I got to tell you, man, we're not thinking alike. I think it's Francisco Lindor. I think it's got to be.
Wow.
Think about the weekend that Francisco Lindor had. Let's go through this slowly and carefully. And I'm not even going to, well, you know what? I am going to include his defense. He makes a leaping catch in the third inning of game one as the Mets are leading 1-0. The bases are loaded. That's scoring two runs, maybe three. So his defense, as Adam, the emailer, pointed out earlier, saved two, maybe three runs and changes the entire complexion of the game. He hits a leadoff home run that turns out to be the game-winning home run in a very close game, and also gets a base hit in the third inning with one out, scores the run on the Soto RBI double that gave them a 2-0 lead. So he's a part of both of the runs that give the Mets the 2-0 lead. Then he hits a home run in the eighth inning that they really needed because the game got so tight. It's a 3-2 game. And as great as Edwin Diaz is, like, you want some insurance, and Lindor gives it. So 3-for-4, three of the four runs that the Mets score, Lindor scores, and he makes a leaping catch that bails him out defensively. Not done yet. Let's go to Saturday's game. Now, granted, the Mets won the game 8-2, so it's tough to circle one guy. He was on base four times. He started the first inning with a base hit. Of course, the Mets would then load the bases up and score four runs. He walks in the second inning, doesn't turn into anything, singles in the fourth inning, and then scores on the Brandon Nimmo home run, right? And then he walks in the sixth inning. So he's on base four times on Saturday and then finally strikes out in the eighth inning. Who gives a crap? And then in Sunday's game, hits the game-winning home run. Like, Reed Garrett and Edwin Diaz, unbelievable jobs. I am not going to diminish them because as relievers, they impacted two close games by pitching incredibly well. But Francisco Lindor was so good offensively in this series and so good defensively. His final numbers, by the way, 6-for-11 offensively with three home runs. And he walked two times. So he was on base eight times.
To me, it's Francisco Lindor.
And here's the other thing, too. I'll tell you this much. They seem like they're having fun. And Nimmo and Lindor, we talked about how the apple didn't go for Juan Soto. On TV, Nimmo and Lindor are posing for their picture when Soto crushes that home run and with smiles on their face. So anybody who sits there and says Juan Soto's not having a good time and they're having a rough time in the F you, this team is gelling and they're looking good and they're having fun, dude. It was a good series for everybody. And listen, I love Lindor. I feel like you can give it to him almost every week. So that's fine. I'll let it slide.
No. Hold on. That your arguments for Garrett and Diaz are great. Like, they are very worthy winners. But the one thing I'll never subscribe to, because I hear this in the NBA all the time, is, well, you could give the MVP to LeBron every year. If you can give it to him, you should give the MVP to who the MVP is, not, well, he's won too much. Like, I've never believed in that. So this is Lindor's third victory. There's been some controversy because there's been other weeks in which many have claimed he deserved to win. So there are going to be some tough wins and some tough losses. This is his third. So it's not like he wins it every single week. And he trails Pete Alonso, who's won it four times. In fact, there's only been three multi-time Rico I'm the Man Now stars of the series. Alonso 4, Lindor 3, Brett Beatty 2.
Ooh.
That's it. Everyone else is a one-time winner.
Listen, and I got to be honest with you, and I know the conversation continues to pop up here and there, but if you have to pick one guy who is the captain of this team, it is Lindor. Like, he just adds a bolt of lightning to this team. And I know that nobody wants to talk about giving the C anytime soon, but David Wright's number is going to retire very soon. They're going to put that number up there. Be a good day to hand over the C.
I don't think he needs the C. I think he's already the C. So I don't think it's necessary, but there was a great article in The Athletic, I think it was 4 or 5 days ago, talking about how Lindor goes up to each player at the end of every series just to look into their eyes and say, how you feeling? So he does have a lot of leadership qualities, but one thing you have to do as a leader is you have to perform. And Lindor, who went through a slump like basically everyone else in this lineup did, he's certainly out of it. This was a hell of a weekend against Colorado. And now the challenge begins because they did win 2 out of 3 against the LA Dodgers, but now it's in LA. It's 4 games in LA, and it's going to be real interesting. And I was not surprised because you figured Blackburn was going to be added to this series. We did the math and realized that they were going to need to add somebody by Thursday to keep Kodai Senga from not pitching on regular rest. And so Mendy's decision is to pitch Paul Blackburn in the opener of this series against LA. And so what's going to make this challenging is if I asked you, and we'll just put Blackburn at the end because he hasn't pitched yet this year, to rank the 5 starters in terms of confidence you have in them. Just that. Not looking at the numbers this year. Just, hey, playoffs start today. We could even do that dumb argument. Playoffs start today. How would you line up the 5 guys? And remember, the 5 guys in this rotation have started every single game but 4. Like, they've all made their starts, knock on wood. They've all been healthy. But the 5 guys I'm obviously talking about are David Peterson, Kodai Senga, Clay Holmes, Tyler McGill, and Griffin Canning. If I asked you, Hoff, to rank the 5 in terms of trust levels, how would you rank them?
This might throw you off, but I'm going to put Kodai obviously first. I'm going to put Peterson second. I do think that he deserves it. Clay Holmes above Canning, because I'm starting to get a little worried about Canning. And then obviously McGill. Last, I'm not really comfortable at all.
I think the one thing we'd all agree with is however you want to rank the top 3 guys, it's Holmes, Senga, and it's Peterson. However you want to rank them. So you went Senga, Peterson, Holmes, fine. Some may say it's Clay Holmes ahead of that, whatever. The point is the weak links in the Met rotation, especially recently, are Tyler McGill and Griffin Canning. Well, if you look at who the Mets have lined up in these 4 games against LA, it is going to be Paul Blackburn, who has not pitched yet this season, so I don't know what the heck you're supposed to expect from him. Tyler McGill and Griffin Canning. They're starting the series against the Dodgers with what I think we'd all agree are the 3 weak links in the rotation, or at least the guys that you trust less than the other guys. A weak link may be too harsh for a guy like Griffin Canning, who's had a really good year, but he's had 2 starts in a row that make you say, okay, has the clock struck midnight? That's the question around Canning. So this is going to be a challenge, these four games. By the way, I have it listed as Dustin May on Monday, Clayton Kershaw on Tuesday, Tony Gonsolin on Wednesday, and Landon Knack in the finale on Thursday afternoon. David Peterson would pitch the finale of this series. So this is going to be a challenge for the back of the rotation, and it's also a part of what is going to start to feel like a competition because it's getting closer now. Frankie Montas could be a week and a half away, and the Mets are excited to enter Montas into the rotation. Sean Manaea may be days away from a rehab start. Now, that just begins the process. I think they're going to take it slow with Sean, and you've got a month, honestly. Like, the Mets, if they wanted, could take this all the way until July before Sean Manaea returns, but he's on his way back. And so I read this email from Frank, who asks about the rotation. Evan and Pete, love the podcast. Thanks for all you do. You're welcome. I'm sitting here trying to figure out what they're going to do with this rotation when Manaea and Montas are ready. The Mets have the lowest team ERA in the MLB. Clearly, the rotation is doing a great job. I understand McGill is dispensable, but what about the rest of them? This rotation is nails, and I hate to mess with them. Number one, things take care of himself. Guys will get hurt. The Mets have been very fortunate so far that their entire rotation has been healthy. And I say that knowing their entire rotation hasn't been healthy. They just suffered their injuries in spring. I mean, since the season started, the rotation they broke camp with has been healthy. Obviously, Manaea and Montas haven't been there. Same with Paul Blackburn. But remember, Blackburn was going to be the sixth guy. Their plan coming out of camp before Blackburn got hurt was he was going to be a long reliever and then inserted whenever they added these six starters. And remember what they've done. Brandon Waddell, Blake Tidwell, and Justin Hagenman. Those are the three guys. Obviously, they weren't all starts because they did openers with Hagenman and with Waddell, but point is the same. Those were the guys that came up. It was supposed to be Blackburn. So what I would tell you, Frank, A, it'll take care of itself. B, I think Blackburn is clearly earmarked for that spot where he's just a long man. I think once Montas comes back, the guys to keep an eye on, because that's soon, would be, well, Blackburn just remains a long man and Montas just enters the rotation and they go straight six. And they don't manipulate it anymore. They don't look at the amount of games in a row. They just say, sorry, if it means 6 or 7 days of rest, it means 6 or 7 days of rest. I would lean towards that. If they don't want to do that, McGill is the guy and Canning is the guy that they're going to take a look at. Now, McGill can be sent down. Canning can't. So in Canning's case, it would be moving him to the bullpen, which I don't think is a likely scenario right now. So if I had to guess, for the time being, Montas is the sixth guy upon return. If everyone remains healthy, and now Manaea's on his way back, I think McGill is the likeliest guy because he has options. Options is a very big part of this. But let's hope that's a situation the Mets are in because it means everyone is still healthy and still pitching well, and it doesn't become like an easy decision that takes care of itself.
Do you see them at all maybe combining Canning and maybe a McGill or something like that so that maybe you just lose a bullpen arm and make one of them like a long relief so that you can just combine two guys and squish them together and say, hey, you're going 4-4.
You know what the problem with that is? Think about the roster. You know, you only have room for 13 relievers. So if you have a long man who's not a part of that in Paul Blackburn, and now you're adding two starters, you're just weakening the amount of names you could have in your bullpen.
Ah, yeah. Well, that sucks.
That's the problem.
Bad strategy. Sorry.
Our good friend Dan writes, would you consider Confortoing Alvarez soon? And he doesn't even have two World Series home runs on his resume. That, of course, means sending Francisco Alvarez down to the minor leagues. I'm not there yet. I'm not. Because I think if you do that, look, you're not doing it to make your team better. You're doing it because you think it's better for him. Because I don't think, like, Hayden Singer did a good job. I don't mean to knock him. But the Mets aren't better off with Hayden Singer being on this team. They're just not. Like, they're better off with Alvarez maybe playing less and Torrens getting more starts. But I don't think it necessarily means you're better. So if they determine that they're doing that in terms of, hey, we think this is how he's going to develop better. Maybe he's gotten too cocky and he needs to be humbled. Not saying that's the case, but that's the only way you would do it. I'm not really in favor of that.
I'm, you know what, not for nothing, but there's a couple different names that we're sitting here talking about as far as what are they going to do? Because Alvarez, I don't want to send down, but if Mauricio keeps on hitting, we had this conversation a little bit, I think, on yesterday's podcast or this morning's podcast, whatever, whenever it was, that
your previous episode, that's the best way to look at it. And you can download it right now, wherever you download your Rico Brothers.
490. The fact is that a lot of people call for Luis Angel to get moved out or Vientos to get moved out. How do you do that? How do you pick anybody to get moved down?
Let's discuss that. And I want to read Cliff's email concerning this. Guys, appreciate the way you guys regularly break down David Stern's press conferences, as you do in Rico 490. But I think you missed one subtle yet important Stern's phrasing relating to the Mauricio playing time issue. Stern said, quote, if we're going to bring him up, he's got to play. And how does that work? I mean, we've got some other guys hitting pretty well and helping us. We also have some guys who are out of options. And so figuring out exactly what the puzzle looks like is a real part of it. You moved on to discussing Jared Young and Luis Angel Acuña as guys with options, but Stearns referenced guys out of options. The only guy that fits that description while sharing a positional fit with Ronnie Mauricio is Mark Vientos. I believe that as things stand now, Stearns is telling us that Mark has lost his juice and would be at risk of demotion to AAA, but for the fact that he's out of options. Something to keep an eye on and perhaps explains why he's giving Jared Young some run. And I'm fine with a DH job share for Vientos Young. Young hit 32 home runs, slugged 300. Or hit 300, slugged 500 in his 165 AAA games before heading to Korea in 597 and 5 in 97 AAA plate appearances at Syracuse. He's probably not really a thing, but Vientos has lost, and Ronnie has still not played three games in a row. That's a bright flashing neon light that they believe his body is not yet acclimated to the baseball grind. Keeping him healthy to be able to play every day in September should be priority one, even if it means we don't see him in Queens for another month in Stearns We Trust. Cliff. Yeah, great point. That's a subtle thing that I didn't even pick up on, that Stearns did say we've got guys out of options. And if you look at the Met roster in terms of position players, who's out of options, Mark Vientos is out of options. Brett Beatty is not, but Brett Beatty is earning being up here. It's kind of crazy how things can change based on performance. I think if anyone ever alluded to sending Vientos down in March and Beatty being up here, we'd be like, get your head examined. But obviously performance has changed that. So Beatty has options. They could send him down. They already have. They're not going to do that. He's earned being up here. Jared Young has options they could send down. Luis Angel Acuña has options they can send down. Francisco Alvarez has options, but obviously you're only doing that by returning it by calling up a catcher, so it doesn't really help this. Vientos doesn't have options, but what does that mean? Like, honestly, if Vientos did have options, right, I wouldn't send him down. Like, I'm not as down on him as maybe David Stearns is or maybe Carlos Mendoza is. I'm not ready to give up on him this early in the season when he has shown a little bit of a pulse. He does have 6 home runs this year. He has hit a little bit recently. Like, I wouldn't want to send him down. And one last thing. To Cliff's point about Mauricio, he hasn't played 3 days in a row. It is true. He continues to pound at AAA, but I ask you this question. With all the options the Mets have up here, would he play 3 days in a row up here? And the answer is not at first. I mean, maybe eventually, but I think this is such a deep roster right now, and there are so many guys that you could argue should play, that if Ronnie Mauricio was up here, I don't think you'd have to grind him out every single day. So if he's not going to play every day at AAA and he's going to play 4 times a week or 5 times a week, why can't he do that up here? And to me, the only guy I would send down is Jared Young. I wouldn't send Acuña down because I think he helps the team with his defense and his speed.
Even though it is starting to, I think, wear on the young kid that he's not playing every day and his bat's taking a hit for that. Defensively and, you know, speed-wise, he's fine. But hitting-wise, that's hurting. And here's the other question I have for you, too. How far away is Jesse Winker? We're talking about, you know, hey, maybe Mauricio moving up. Once Winker comes back, you're talking about another spot that's not going to be available.
Jose Cerrito. These are things that take care of itself. It kind of goes back to the rotation stuff, especially Winker and Cerrito. They're a long ways away, so I wouldn't even think about it or worry about it or ponder it, because the Mets, for the most part, and I'm going to knock on wood as I say this, have been fortunate with injuries. They've had a few. I'm not saying they haven't, but they haven't been ravaged by injuries like we've seen in the past with some Met teams where sometimes things can take care of itself.
One thing I want to say about the options, and now I think about it, they kind of screwed themselves, because sometimes you just send people down because you have an option, you could send them down. Well, they did with that with Vientos over the past couple of years, like where it's like, well, we're not going to keep him. He has options. We're going to send him down.
It doesn't work that way. It's based on years.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah. So it's not like, well, they've called up Brett Beatty a bunch of times. He's out of options. No, it's based on the years of options. So you'd have to go back early into Mark Vientos' career and see how that could have been manipulated. I'm not exactly sure about that, but it's not as if sending a guy up and down is going to ruin their amount of options. It's more the amount of time they've been in the minor leagues, or amount of time they've spent on the 40-man roster, or amount of times they've spent in the major leagues. This is going to be a fun road trip. And by fun, I mean not fun, because the games are going to start at 10 o'clock at night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and those can be a pain. Will we have instant reactions at 1 o'clock in the morning? The odds are actually pretty high that we will, because Hoff's a late upper. These West Coast games drive me crazy. I think there's a damn good chance, and this is why you should subscribe to the Rico Brogna, because you never know when we're going to give you a live one, or certainly subscribe to the WFAN YouTube page. But I certainly think, based on the way the games go, we may have some West Coast Ricos, especially with a four-game series. Four games is a lot. So expect them. Download the Rico Brogna, subscribe to the WFAN YouTube page, and be ready. I would love a split with LA. I mean, that would be a great success. Why would it be a great success? That would mean the Mets win a tiebreaker against the LA Dodgers. And tiebreakers are not just about wild cards. They're also about home field advantage. If the Mets and Dodgers finish tied, whether it's for the number one seed in the National League or the number two seed in the National League, or it is a wild card spot, because the Mets are only a game up, and even the LA Dodgers, as much as we want to hand them the National League West, they only lead the Padres by two games. So they haven't exactly run away with it. But right now, the Mets are a game better than the LA Dodgers. Right now, the Mets are tied with the Chicago Cubs. So if we're playing the tiebreak game, the Mets are the number one seed in the National League, because they do have the tiebreaker currently over the Chicago Cubs. They've won two out of three. They'll obviously play some games in Chicago later on. If the Mets split against the Dodgers, they win the season series. And for home field advantage, for potentially a first round bye, for potentially wild card seedings, for making the playoffs, for anything you want to draw up, that matters. Last year, I said this a lot. I got mocked a lot. It mattered. It's why the Mets made the freaking playoffs, because they won the season series against the Arizona Diamondbacks. So I'd be thrilled with a split. Am I confident considering who they have lined up to pitch? Not really. But this would be really impressive, especially after beating them in New York and winning two out of three. And look, the Rocky thing, we'll talk about this more because we'll have a few more Ricos before that series starts. Now that they've gotten the sweep against them at City, I actually look at Denver and say, go win two out of three. So if you can get two out of three against the Rockies, you can split against the Dodgers. A 4-3 road trip would be completely fine. If you're thinking about the Philadelphia Phillies, who are just coming off a sweep at the hands of the Milwaukee Brewers, they're going to Toronto and they're playing three games in Toronto before they go to Pittsburgh, and they're playing three games in Pittsburgh. So there you go. Just looking ahead if we're breaking down the National League East. We do appreciate you listening and subscribing. You can email the pod, thericob@gmail.com, your thoughts on lineups as things are going on during games. And stay up late this week, because pretty good chance we're going to have some 1 a.m. Ricos. Or if you fall asleep, download it in the morning and listen to it on your car ride to work. Thank you very much for listening to episode 491 of Rico Brogna.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya Podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.